From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Sunnyvale, California.
Oakland, California.
Oakland, California.
North Oakland.
North Oakland.
North Berkeley.
South Berkeley.
Coming up, as Oakland continues its search for a permanent police chief, we hang out with the current chief's right-hand man.
The chief and I both believe that there's a disproportionate representation in the criminal justice system for people of color.
Then we'll visit a teacher who's taking an old school approach in her classroom.
I am a teacher, curriculum director, technology decider.
And we'll hear the eclectic cultural mix behind the band Locura.
What style of music do you play? You know, do you fit into this nice, neat box? It's always a hard one to answer because we take little bits of everything.
We're going outside of the box for today's edition of Cross Currents. It's been nearly 9 months since former Oakland Police Chief Howard Jordan abruptly resigned.
It happened very quickly.
Yeah.
I can tell you that really none of us expected it.
That's Paul Figueroa. At the time of Jordan's resignation, he was a captain running the police academy. That week, he got a call from the new interim chief, Sean Wendt, who wanted to promote him to assistant chief. Figueroa said yes.
You know, to be asked to step into this role is an honor, and it's a great time of need for the city and the department.
Now, instead of training recruits, he's deploying them. While city leaders continue their search for a permanent chief, he's doing his best to increase community trust and reduce crime. His work is attracting notice. The San Francisco Chronicle recently named Figueroa one of the Bay Area's people to watch in 2014. KLW's Kyungjin Lee spent some time with the assistant chief, and she brings us this story.
These days, 19-year OPD veteran Paul Figueroa attends a lot of meetings. We're sitting at his 8th-floor office in downtown Oakland, reviewing his weekly calendar.
So then on Mondays, we go to executive staff meeting at 9 a.m., where I meet with the chief. We do the conference call on Tuesday, and then this week we had a racial profiling committee. We went to a monthly parties meeting. We meet in the chief's conference room.
This list doesn't even include the community and public safety meetings he also attends regularly. All in all, Figueroa says he easily works around 15 hours a day, plus Saturdays. He's still trying to get used to the pace of the job, but as demanding as it is...
I temper that with just the tremendous honor that it is. This stuff has to get done. This is our public information office.
We head down to the auditorium for the day's first event, an award ceremony honoring exemplary officers.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome, friends.
One officer gets an award for going out of his way to help a young man change his life around.
Lieutenant Wingate took the necessary steps to get him into junior college. Lieutenant Wingate personally relocated him and paid for his expenses. Lieutenant Wingate supported his academics by proofreading his papers and giving him guidance. The young man is now a sophomore with a 3.33 GPA.
It's no secret that OPD has a bad rap in certain parts of Oakland. Last year, the department's Internal Affairs Division got more than 1,500 complaints. But Figueroa says no one tracks stories like this, where officers try to help.
That's probably one of the most frustrating things for me in this position.
We head back up to his office to get ready to go into the field.
So I have a pistol here, extra ammunition here, a radio, and... a taser, which we have to test before we take it out. And so I'm going to pull the trigger now, and it's only going to make a sound. So don't be too scared. So.
We get on the road and head towards the Fruitvale District. I ask about a recent report showing that the department arrests young black men at a disproportionately high rate.
I can tell you that the chief and I both believe that that there's a disproportionate representation in the criminal justice system for people of color, and that we are very concerned about that, and we want to be part of a solution which looks at a holistic approach to lower that number.
These streets are familiar to Figueroa. He was born and raised in these parts and still has strong connections here.
We're going to pass St. Elizabeth's High School on the left and St. Elizabeth's Church on the left as well as we continue. I was an altar boy there for a lot of years. And the elementary school is going to be on our right-hand side.
He actually decided to become a cop because of his experience growing up. He still remembers how the officers handled the case.
They were clearly competent. They took the person into custody actually pretty quickly. And they just exuded integrity to me. And I was just so impressed with that.
We park and head into the elementary school.
Hello.
Welcome.
How are you?
How are you?
Good, good. I have a reporter with me, and I wanted to show her my picture on the wall if I could. And did you call me this thing?
As Figueroa shows me around the campus, he says he knows a lot of people don't like the police.
I completely understand that, and sometimes rightfully so, right? And we have to own that when that happens, when we haven't performed like we should.
He knows the department has to take the first step to improve relationships. At the same time, though, he says trust building is a two-way street.
Police officers are human beings, and we need to know that we're cared and valued by the community as well. And so it's really the long-term fix of trust between the police and community. I believe we have to take the first step.
We call him Fig.
Sophia Navarro is the chief operating officer for Unity Council, a community-based organization that's worked in the Fruitvale for 50 years.
So usually interactions with officers has just been, you know, when something happens, I've seen something different in Paul in that, you know, I can tell as an individual he really cares about making a difference in Oakland.
She's worked with Figueroa for almost 5 years on things like reaching out to the undocumented community and getting more bilingual officers into the neighborhood. She says even though it's been a while since he worked in this area daily, he's taken time to do what he can. For example, back when he ran the police academy, he invited her and a colleague to address new recruits.
To make sure that, you know, we were bringing the issues of the community to the new recruits and that they were familiar and understood the cultural differences here.
But, she says, there's only so much he can do.
Our community, unfortunately, has felt that when they report, their statement is, well, what's the point of reporting if no one's going to show up and address the issues? And so then they become complacent.
I was pulled over. The first thing he asked was, who car is this? Where you get this car from?
Pastor Billy Dixon Jr. was born and raised in Deep East Oakland. He knows from personal experience about police-community tension in this part of town. But Dixon says he's had more good experiences with Oakland officers than bad. And despite their limited resources, things are starting to change at OPD.
When has Oakland ever had cops riding bicycles in Deep East Oakland? Never had that before.
Still, he says, bikes aren't enough.
Even if they have to arrest somebody, we want them to understand. We want to be able to know that they did it in good faith, that this is not nothing that they're just doing or just trying to throw young men in jail, but it's a good faith arrest and that we submit to their authority because they're right.
Back at St. Elizabeth, Figueroa says the department and the city have a plan to get more officers on the street. He says they're putting special emphasis on recruiting from Oakland. And overall, the department is starting to show results. While robberies have gone up, homicides plummeted by 30% in 2013 compared to the year before. Figueroa is pleased, but he concedes.
That's exciting, but we still have a lot more work to do.
And he says he'll be there to do it. In Oakland, I'm Kyungjin Lee for Cross Currents.
With all of the changes happening within the Oakland Police Department, we want to hear what you think. What changes are you hoping to see in the OPD under new direction? Give us a call at 415-264-7106. That number again to leave us a message is 415-264-7106, and we'll try and get your perspective on the air. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Finding the right replacement for any job can take a long time, but there's an elementary school in Marin County that's never really had that problem, mostly because there's only one person who's required to do it all.
I wear a lot of hats. I am Dr. Doyle when I have to be the nurse or the doctor around here. I am a teacher, curriculum director, technology decider, fixer, plumber. My aide takes care of the throw-up, and I take care of the dead mice.
Sandy Doyle works in a one-room schoolhouse at Lincoln Elementary. It's the oldest one still operating in California, and it's one of three in rural Marin County, mostly serving ranching and farming families in the area. But they're more than just that. They're also community hubs. We sent KALW's Ryan Miller back to school to find out how this 19th century institution delivers a 21st century education.
I've driven for just under an hour up Highway 101. I turn off and head west along the back roads of Marin County. I park my car on the side of a country road next to a horse pasture. There's a big red barn in the distance. I cross the street and look up at a white wooden building. The bell tower makes it obvious. It's an old one-room schoolhouse. Cars pull up and drop off kids.
Thank you.
I join head teacher and principal, Sandy Doyle, in the schoolyard. Everyone here knows her as Mrs. Doyle.
This school is surrounded by fields that have been farmed and ranched for hundreds of years. There are no other buildings around the school at all. And people drive by and not recognize that the school is active unless they actually see kids and cars out here.
This place is pretty much like it was more than a century ago. The kids line up out front when the bell rings.
Good morning, class.
Good morning, Mrs. Doyle and Mrs. Lester and Hayden and Kate and Ryan.
Ryan, that's me. I'm surprised to be added to the list of good morning greetings, a list that includes the teachers and Mr. Nuts, the squirrel who lives in the schoolyard.
Let's see who's ready to come in. Nice straight lines. I really like how quietly you're coming in. Great way to start a week.
The start of the week, it's Tuesday.
I follow the students up the stairs and we go inside. The walls are completely covered with multicolored posters, all kinds of artwork, and whiteboards with assignments. There's a library area, a corner with a rug and pillows on the floor, and a big half-moon table to one side.
We've got stations so that I can have groups work together by themselves without a teacher, but I can still see what's going on. We have an area that we call K1 Center, so it's set up just for the little guys that we have in the back room.
But lessons don't begin right away.
America the Beautiful?
Yeah! You guys, this is so gorgeous.
First, the kids sing several patriotic songs. Mrs. Doyle stands before them, performing the words in American Sign Language, while they follow along. When they're done, the kids all politely introduce themselves to me.
Hello, my name is Elizabeth, and I'm in fourth grade.
Eye contact, please.
Hi, my name is Carlos, and I'm in third grade.
Hello, my name is Bryce.
There are 12 students this year, four girls and eight boys, ranging from kindergarten through fourth grade.
Hi, my name is Paige and I'm in second grade.
Specialists come in to teach some subjects, like Spanish and music. While the assistant teacher, Mrs. Wester, teaches younger kids in the back, Mrs. Doyle handles the rest.
I'd like for second grade to please get your spelling papers out. Third grade reading group. Third grade Geo, get your spelling test ready. And fourth grade, please do the same. I do not want running in my classroom. I know we have a guest.
Mrs. Doyle settles into a rocking chair in the corner.
Frown.
As she calls out spelling words,
frown.
She holds up index cards marked 3 and 4 so that the children know which is the third grade word and which is for the fourth grade.
Do not frown in Mrs. Doyle's classroom. Serve. Serve. It is an honor to serve our country. Serve. Purpose. The purpose of education is just not to learn about books and math, but also how to learn to work with people. Learn. Oh, purpose.
Low-tech solutions like using index cards are one way Mrs. Doyle can manage multiple grades and skill levels.
Crowd. Yesterday we had.
But she's also increasingly using high-tech. Last year, the school raised money to buy iPads for every child.
Each grade level has a day that they can use the apps on the iPad, and I've downloaded apps specific to math, specific to social studies, specific to language arts.
Find up.
up. That's great.
I did it.
Fourth grade, raise your hand right now. All fourth graders. Hold on, third grade, just a second. Second grade. Will you take your spelling words out, please?
Constantly going between one class and another, and sometimes with the grade levels. I have two different levels as far as what I'm doing with the curriculum, and other times I have five.
So she doesn't just switch grade levels. She also switches from teaching English to teaching history to teaching math.
Is this a rectangle? Look at the sides here and look at the sides here. Tell me if that is a rectangle.
No.
The small size of the school forces Mrs. Doyle to juggle all the time. That's a challenge, but it's also a chance to be flexible, to innovate and quickly adjust to the needs of the students.
We get to do things here that no one else gets to do, just because we're so small.
Like what?
Oh, let's see. If we decide today that we want to do a field trip tomorrow, I can contact the parents, get the signatures, and in two carloads, we're gone. If something is not happening in the classroom that I want to happen, I can make a decision immediately to make that change without a huge, major bureaucracy to go through.
Marin's one-room schoolhouses were built to serve the children of the ranching and farming community of this area. Students Paige and Bryce Grossi are children of a fourth-generation dairy farmer. Their dad, Dominic, and his two sisters went to Lincoln.
Well, I love that. I mean, the fact that they have that type of education that we had, the small school like that, works out really nice.
But his wife, Nancy, went to a conventional school, and she had some concerns until she met Mrs. Doyle.
Oh, she's wonderful. She's like second mom to the kids. You know, she's great personality. The kids love her, so they feel very comfortable there, which is wonderful. They could tell her anything and... Yeah.
Are you ready?
It's 12 o'clock. Time for lunch.
You may wash up. You may go now.
In the 140-odd years that kids have learned in this building, Marin County has changed quite a lot. The towns of Novato and Petaluma sprouted up less than a 15-minute drive from here. While there are other places to bring people together now, the schoolhouse is still a vital part of the community.
This is a vision of old Americana, and I hope that this never, ever shuts down. I really do. I don't know how many people have said, if I knew that this existed, I would have my children here in a heartbeat, because they all work together. They're all playing together.
And here at Lincoln Elementary School, they can all be in one room together. For Cross Currents, I'm Ryan Miller.
You can find out more about the One Room School at our website. We're KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Every now and then, we like to take you deeper into the local music scene with a segment we call Bay Area Beats. It's when we have a listen to the music that's making waves in the Bay Area and the people that make it. San Francisco band Locura reflects the Bay Area's mix of cultures and histories. Locura blends flamenco, Cuban son, reggae, cumbia, and ska to make their own revolutionary party music. Let's hear from the band's lead singer, Kata Miletic, and guitarist Bob Sanders in this story from our archives.
I was born and raised in Spain. My father was a Californian who came there and met my mother, ended up staying 20 years, and then we moved to Italy. And at some point after I graduated high school, I came to the U.S.
Almost every member of the band has a cultural heritage that is from somewhere else.
For me, I think the Locura sound evolved parallel to both Bob and I's own personal musicianship.
The only genre that we intentionally set out to do was rumba flamenca.
And then as we met musicians that were coming from, you know, Afrobeat traditions and salsa and cumbia, well then that, of course, and being in the Bay, being surrounded by so much diversity and so many different styles of music, that's how I see the sound evolving.
madre viene, ay de mi madre viene, con esta canción como la indígena, ay de cada tierra, sí de cada tierra.
So Con el Viento was a song that was inspired by thinking about this kind of resurgence of my Spanish identity here in California, because I'd been away from Spain for so many years. So that song is a song for kind of honoring my coming here and all the people who've come through here and all the stories that we carry within us.
Abre la puerta, abre la ventana, con el viento venimos. Abre la puerta, abre la ventana, con el viento venimos.
The concept of ida y vuelta is a concept that really inspires us in Locura, and ida y vuelta means the going and coming back, so round trip, essentially. It's this idea of songs and traditions and styles of music that traveled with the people coming from Spain, the sailors, you know, the colonizers and the Africans to Las Americas, and those traditions mixing here with the indigenous folk here and the different styles and traditions here. And then, you know, from Cuba going back to Spain and then getting incorporated into flamenco.
The idea that we have flamenco now as this pure art form that stands by itself is false, because the only reason it exists is because it has mixed over so many years of so many styles. The song Que Falta was born sitting in the rehearsal studio with our bass player Izzy, who's heavily influenced by Afrobeat and funk, and he had an idea for this riff that opens the song. And then we just kept coming up with all these different musical variations, and we taught that music to the rest of the band, and Kata put her lyrics to it. So that's a great example of a song that it's funk influenced. You get into the verse, you've got a salsa groove. You get into the chorus, it goes to a timba swing, and then it goes back to funk for the bridge section, some drum breaks. That's quintessential Locura.
Name my fears and sing them to the sea.
We and I do feel pressure to, you know, just kind of categorizing Locura. What style of music do you play? You know, do you fit into this nice, neat box of flamenco or, you know, timba or reggae? Or are you a rock band? Are you an indie band? You know, what kind of style do you fit in? And it's always a hard one to answer because we don't really fit into any of those categories. You know, we take little bits of everything.
From what I see being in the music scene here, it's very apparent that that's what bands do in the Bay Area.
Manzanilla, rezo de la mañana. Manzanilla, pa curar el alma y despertar rojo el corazón.
I can't just get into one style. Just as I can't just sing lyrics in English or just sing lyrics in Spanish. And so in one way, I don't want to fit into any box. I want to continue to cultivate the style of music that finds a common ground between different styles, you know, whether it's the African roots, whether it's the indigenous roots of here, of different places, and find how different styles of music really can fit in with each other and groove.
You just heard from Kata Miletic and Bob Sanders from the San Francisco-based band Locura. They spoke with KALW's Jen Sheehan, who produced that piece. Locura brings its Califas Mestizo beats to its third album, Dale de Comer, which is being released next week. They'll celebrate their CD release show on February 8th at the Independent in San Francisco. You can find all of that information along with more local music and more local stories at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. That's all for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, the recently married Jen Chien, Jasmine Lopez, Charlotte Silver, Audrey Dilling, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Angela Johnston, Nina Gensler-Debs, Raisu Sussman, Seth Samuel, Melanie Young, and Stephen Short. Today's show is produced by Leela Day and engineered by Chris Hoff. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And today we say goodbye to Casey Miner, our senior editor. She is a wordsmith wizard and editor extraordinaire. You will be missed, Casey, and we wish you well.
I get to say the sentence, Rodney Bagwell is a turkey sandwich.
And we want to give a special shout out to Darcy Drawlinger, who gave us a special dance class here at Cross Currents. You too can dance with Baby D every Sunday at 11 a.m. with his Sunday school classes. Details are at KALW.org. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported local public radio. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.